Two fat expats.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Kirsty.
Episode 10 of Two Fat Expats.
Going strong.
We are. And today we're going to talk about international schooling. Mm-hmm. All right. So how do you choose your international school?
Yeah, well, we come from it from very different.
Because
you've traveled to lots of places and mm-hmm. your kids have been in, you know, a number of different schools and different curriculums, haven't they?
They have.
Whereas for me, Sadie was a toddler when we moved here to Doha.
Yes.
So schooling wasn't even really on our radar.
So at what age did she go to school here?
She started school when she was 3.
Right.
So we sort of had a year and a half here before we had to worry about schooling.
And is that that's a British thing, isn't it?
Yeah. So she, and that was something that I found really hard, that she was going to preschool here, but only a couple of days a week.
Right.
Whereas when you start nursery through the British system, you start at 3 and you're going 5 days a week.
Yeah, yeah.
And it took me, and my mum was like, why would you put her in school in a uniform five days a week? And
because they're just tiny.
They are teeny tiny, but I think it's done her the world of good.
Yeah,
I haven't.
Do you think because she's an only child that it was better
One, because she's an only child and it helps her socialise with other children and she learnt how to share and respect other people's boundaries and that the world didn't revolve around her like it does when we're at our house. And I think she's a bright kid. She definitely takes after her father, not her mother. And she needed it. She needs a lot of intellectual stimulation.
Right.
So, and also Doha now is such a busy city that there's a lot of people not moving here because they can't get their children into a school.
Yeah, so we were going to touch on that. I guess we start with how you make your choice and what you're actually looking for.
Yeah.
So I think, first of all, you've got to look at what your choices are because I know we have lived in certain locations where there really wasn't a lot of choice.
Right.
So you just had to go with what was on offer. Mm-hmm. So that's something to think about if you're moving. I mean, obviously the first thing, even if you have a baby, maybe think about, well, what happens if we're there for more than what we're planning on being?
We didn't think about that at the beginning when she was a baby because we weren't sure how long we were going to be here for.
Yes.
And schooling just wasn't on our radar.
No, it wasn't on mine either.
Yeah, I thought we'd probably be back home for her to start school.
Yeah. In fact, I didn't really even pay attention when people talked about schooling.
No, me neither.
And to the point that we were. So we did Jakarta and I remember meeting a woman who had much bigger children and her talking about the difference between British schooling and American schooling and Australian schooling and sort of thinking, I rang her years later to say, gee, I wish I would have listened to you more because if you've got a baby, it's just not on your radar. School seems so far away.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we thought we'd be home. But when we moved from KL to Libya, we moved in August and it did not even cross my mind that people wouldn't be there because it was
school holidays. Yeah.
Because in Australia.
So in KL, do they sort of have the Australian school holiday system?
Well, it depends which school you go to as well. But there's a big British school in KL and there's a big American school in KL. And so, of course, they tend to have very European, well, North American, European-centric holidays.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so for an Australian, the idea of having 3 months off in the middle of the year, it's just nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't happen. And my children are perpetually confused about how holidays work in Australia, I suppose.
Yeah.
And also in Australia, we don't talk about holidays. We don't talk about spring break.
No.
We don't talk about going away for the fall.
During our big break, which is over the Christmas New Year period back home, no one talks about, well, where are you going for the summer?
No.
That doesn't happen.
Oh, to the beach?
Yeah. We're going camping or going to my mum's house or, you know, some people do go away and go on fabulous holidays, but it's not this whole thing of where are you going for summer? And if you're not going anywhere, it's like you've got two heads.
Yes.
That happens here, doesn't it?
It does. It does. So, let's get started. So I guess Maybe if we talk about personally what we've chosen, just to put the cards on the table. So Sadie is at a British school.
Yes, so she's at an international British school and it's family owned. So a British lady started it and now her son has taken over. And so it's got that very community feel to it. And he doesn't
Is it a not-for-profit school or is it a business?
It's a business. Right. And he runs it as a business. Yeah. But what I love about him is that, so just quickly, they've been fixing the roads around. We've got four schools on our street.
Right.
And the parking there was just a nightmare. You've heard me complain about it.
Yeah.
So the roads authority has been fixing that. And while they were doing that, it was mayhem. The owner of that school was out there in the heat in September every afternoon helping
directing,
all the people. He doesn't have to do that.
No, no.
And he's there at 6:30 every morning. He doesn't go home until all the kids have left.
Yeah.
And I just love that whole feel. And they're very much in with the Parents Association and everything like that. But for me, I went and looked at a lot of different schools here in Doha. And when I walked into that school, it just gave me a good feeling. I just had a good feeling about it. And they also, in primary, do the international primary curriculum.
Right.
Which is, it's sort of like a new age way of learning. So it's not the, you sit there and you do your times tables and then you go to English and you learn how to read. And it's more open where they have themes and topics and that feeds through into all the different subjects. And it, I just loved it. But it does have a British feel to it.
Yeah.
But Sadie's class especially is so international. And I say it's kind of like a mini meeting of the UN when she gets together with her friends. Because she's got, and I love, and that's something that I wanted. I didn't want Sadie to go to a school where everyone was going to look like her, everyone was going to have a British accent. Or I didn't want that.
No.
We're living away from home.
Yeah.
I wanted something different for her.
And because I love, really, what's the point?
What's the point? We may as well just go home and she can be with kids like that. Do you know what I mean? Whereas here, I love that she's got friends from Syria, Jordan, Czech Republic, Canada, France. I love that. And she learns more. She learns more about other countries and other cultures.
So is my guys, are they started, Lizzie, my eldest, started at a school very much, it reminds me very much of that. It was a little British school in Libya, and it was cutesy, cutesy poo, and I just loved it. But then we left Libya and we moved to Canada, and we chose for her and my second child to go to a French international school. That was because of the advice of an old English teacher said to me, French immersion is great for kids at, you know, making them think a certain way and do a certain thing. I loved it community-wise and the community feel of the school.
It's really important, isn't it, I think, that community feel.
I don't know, because we were only there for such a short period of time, I don't know if it was the right thing to do French immersion, but it hasn't, it hasn't caused us any disservice. Do you know, everyone's fine. But if I hadn't have done that, I wouldn't have met the people that I've met, which just I couldn't fathom, because they, it was such a great group of people. So it was all fine in the end. We then went to the States, and so we chose an American school, but it had a very international flavour and it had a very strong British contingent there. So it,
I didn't realise until we moved here that a lot of Brits moved to Houston.
Yeah, they do.
Because of the oil and everything. I didn't know. So there must be a pretty big expat community in that area.
There's a community in Houston called Lakes of Eldridge North, and it is overloaded with expats, like particularly British expats. But on our street in Houston, we had an Australian living next door to us, an Australian living down the road from us. So just on
our
street.
You weren't the only Australians in the village.
We weren't the only Australians in the village. And it was a really, it was beautiful. Like it was, you know, a lot of people are very rude about Texas and moving to Texas, and I was one of those people. I avoided it like the plague. But it really is one of those places, it's like something out of a movie. That you, you know, it's a really cute little place to live. But back to schooling. So what I thought was interesting was there we were in the middle of Texas at this very international school that had kind of
a state
British
school
feel.
Or a private school?
It was a private school. And we chose it because we knew we weren't going to be there for long, and it was really close to our house where we were. At the time, the company that Greg worked for gave us some assistance with schooling. So we thought, well, why
Take
not? Because we weren't, they weren't going to give us the money anyway. It was only solely for, it had to be spent on schooling, so it was kind of, well, why not? And we were kind of conscious of, we wanted them, rather than just go to the local school down the road where there probably wouldn't be a lot of expats, mm-hmm. we wanted them to have a couple of expat friends so they weren't the only kids with the accent, the only kids mm-hmm. that had the travelling parents, mm-hmm. whatever. So it was kind of about 20% expat, 80% local, which I thought was kind of perfect.
And I wouldn't think that would be the norm in the States.
No. Well, I mean, it just depends, because Houston itself is a very transient place.
Right.
So I think it just depends where you are.
Yeah.
So when we moved to Qatar, we had both thought that we would put the children back in a British system.
Mm-hmm.
And I was of the opinion back then, and I've since changed my opinion, but when I first arrived here, I really had this idea, I guess it's that whole thing of being part of the Commonwealth and mm-hmm. having sort of, you know, this British,
yeah.
you know, we have a British-based government system mm-hmm. in Australia. Mm-hmm. You kind of think, well, there's so many things that are British-based. Our schooling must be like that.
Yeah, I thought the same.
Yeah, and it's just not at all. Our schooling is completely different. But at the time, I thought, no, I want them to. And my mother had made a comment too about how my children had come home for Christmas one year when they were at the British school and they'd asked her for sweeties. You know, Granny, can we have sweeties, please?
Yeah.
And then they'd come home the next year from America asking for candy. Can we have candy? And you can tell there is something in Australia when your children open their mouths and their little American accents mm-hmm. come out,
mm-hmm.
you can see Australians literally go, oh, my gosh. Yeah. You know,
it's like when Sadie calls her shoes flip-flops instead of thongs.
Right.
I'm like, they're thongs. Call them thongs, especially when we go back home.
Definitely flip-flops.
I think we've had this conversation before, and I'm all about the thongs.
No, because I have stood with Australians who've talked about wearing their thongs on the beach.
I mean, people think they're G-strings.
People think they're in their G-strings, and they're laughing.
But I've heard, because, I think here in Doha we're lucky that we've got quite a few different curriculums that we can choose from.
Yes.
And I, like you, assumed that because Australia was part of the Commonwealth that she would just go to a British school and it would be like the schools back home, which I have no experience of as a parent. I only know from, you know, my experience as a student. But I've since heard from a couple of people that kids, especially in high school, Aussie kids do better through the American system if they then go back home and they have to integrate back into Australian schools, that Australia and America have more of a similar focus to outlook on education. So that's something that Matt and I consider. We're happy where she is for primary. I love where she is for primary, but maybe if we're here for secondary school, we need to think about swapping.
Yeah, and I have some fixed ideas with secondary school for Australian kids, and that is that I think in the British system, when you're doing O levels and A levels and all of that, it is irrelevant to an Australian kid.
Absolutely. And now I think the A's and the O's are now called your GCSEs and your IGCSEs and all of that. Yeah, essentially the same thing.
You're absolutely right. But people get very fanatical about, well, we can't get moved when we're in the middle of doing that.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter to an Australian. You can move in year 10. Really it's sort of year 11, 12.
To me, year 11 and 12 back home, they're your crucial
years. You wouldn't want to be packing up in the middle of year 12.
No.
So I think the IB is really important to a lot of international kids. But then to Americans, maybe not so much. Although, you know, we do have American friends that are doing the IB.
Yeah.
But they're doing it solely kind of to get a leg up when it comes to applying to American universities.
So with the American curriculum, an American curriculum in an international setting, do they then have the two streams? So you can choose to do your, your high school diploma?
Yeah, you can graduate from high school.
Or you do your IB.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Yeah. My big thing here in the Middle East, and I might be generalising here, is that Sadie, for instance, she's not going to be your engineer or your scientist or anything.
How do you know that at age six?
Just the way that she is, that she's much more into her arts and her literature and her history. That's where that's what she loves. Mm. So I kind of feel, I wonder if that's the direction she's going to take.
Mm.
And when I think about high school, if she is like me, where it was more English, history and drama, is there going to be that opportunity to give that to her? Or because I think that some of the schools do focus on your maths and your science, because a lot of kids will go off into that engineering type field that maybe she's not. The school that I went to in Australia, whatever we were into, we had that.
Yeah. Well, I feel that the school that my children are at now, it doesn't matter. There's something about it for everyone.
Yeah.
But it's a big school, and that's the difference. Yeah. So I would say that when you're moving somewhere, try to plan 5 years ahead.
Yeah.
Because when we moved here and we thought that we wanted a British school, it hadn't crossed my mind that the particular British school we looked at, she would have had to move by the time she was in grade six anyway, mm-hmm. onto somewhere else.
Yeah, because there's not a high school.
Because there wasn't a high school. So I would have effectively moved her into a school and then moved her again. A couple of years later, which is not ideal. Most of us, if we're moving around, we don't want to do internal moving within schools. So always think 5 sort of years in advance to where you want to be and how that school is. And my big thing is facilities. And so if you're very happy, like I know a lot of people with young children like to have a really small school where they feel very secure and they feel that, you know, small is better because they're little and they don't want lots of big people around. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. But also think about what facilities are on offer, because if you then have to get in your car at the end of the day and drive across the city, which might be fine when you're home and living in the burbs, but when you're living in, you know, Mumbai or Jakarta or Dubai,
it's not going to work.
Yeah, logistically, it's really hard to get across to ballet lessons if you've got to get across the other side.
Yeah.
So have a look, and you will start to, it's that whole, you know, nasty expat, you'll start to get grumpy if you are constantly driving from A to B when others have a school.
And everyone knows from episode one that we have recently moved house.
Yeah.
Now, technically, we actually were quite close to Sadie's school, but with Doha traffic, that wasn't the case. My life has changed so much for the better because I am 4 minutes drive from school.
Right.
I do my school drop-off within 10 minutes.
Wow.
That's
unheard of here.
Yeah. And then all of her, she can do a lot of activities at school, but the activities she's chosen we do outside of school, but they are all within 5-10 minutes of home, whereas they weren't for the last few years. Yeah. And it was getting to the point where I'm like, you know what, let's not go to gymnastics today because I couldn't be bothered sitting in the traffic for an hour.
Yeah.
Whereas now we're back and forth within 10 minutes.
Yes.
And it's just...
Yeah.
So I think when choosing your school, you've got to think about the location of your house, location of different activities that they're going to do.
Yeah.
Can the school fulfill those activities for you where you don't maybe have to pick them up at school?
But this takes us back, says, to timing, because this is a big thing with working parents is, you know, in Australia, G and I both worked in Canada, and that was fine. We had a school bus that took, and we had someone that came and met the kids at the bus and brought them home. Now, that was fine because it was a 9 to 3 school day, and so by the time we got home, it's sort of
they
6.
They weren't away from you for very long.
No, they really weren't away. What happens in our bizarre, this does not happen everywhere, but in the Middle East, in British schools, they basically get up at dawn to get their children to school. At what time?
So Sadie starts school at 7:30 and she gets picked up at 1:20. So I have to cram.
You said 1:20.
1:20. So I have to cram my whole work day into those hours because then the afternoon is full of activities or homework or being with her.
Yes.
So I know a lot of mums that really want to go back to work.
Or dads.
Yeah. Parents that want to go back to work, but they can't because 1:30 till 6 o'clock at night, that is a big chunk of time that you're leaving your child with a babysitter, nanny, housekeeper, what have you. And so a lot of parents feel that they both can't go back to work, that one will work and one will stay at home with the kids because there's not that, they don't finish school till 3, we get home at 5:30, it's 2.5 hours away from each other, it's fine. You don't really, it's hard here.
If that is affecting your career, that affects your whole expat experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if you can't get back to work because the school is prohibitive to you getting back to work.
It's not the right school for you.
Yeah. So you've got to think about, okay, do I want to now, the school that my guys are at, they start at 8 and they finish at 3 and then the majority of their after-school activities happen afterwards. So quite often I don't pick my guys up until 4:30.
Yeah. See, that's
yes.
But I mean, you know, when we work together, I'm like, right, I've got to get out of here, I've got to get out. or I have to rely on someone else to pick her up if we've got meetings in town and stuff.
It does. Yeah. But here's the thing. When I moved here with a three-year-old who was in, he went to nursery like 2 days a week. Quite often he didn't go because he didn't like it. And he's the fourth child and he was spoiled. But he was going to nursery sort of a couple of days a week. But it was like a, I think I had to pick him up at 2 and then pick the others up at 3.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all still little to do after school activities. Yeah. So I was still doing sort of effectively 2 pickups.
Yeah.
So really for me to have found a job, and this was why I started writing, is because I really thought I was going to move here and work in HR and get back to the office, just like I had when we'd lived in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
But I got here and thought, I'm going to have to find a job that starts at 9 and finishes at 1.
Yeah, and see, we've had this because I got a job in a school doing something that I'm way overqualified to do.
Yeah.
But I did it because I wanted to work.
Yes.
But I also wanted to be there for Sadie.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing, at the end of the day, because we had the same work and school hours, I still didn't drop her off or pick her up.
Yes.
But I was home. Yes. So we got home at the same time. Yeah.
And that's the thing. International schools are full of massively overqualified women who have chosen to work school hours just because it's, in inverted commas, easier.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know a woman who is an Egyptologist. That means she can read hieroglyphics. And she worked in the library at school because, you know, school hours. And, you know, I know women who are lawyers that work and they are underpaid.
Yeah.
And
this all comes back to our guilt, doesn't it? Our mother guilt and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's something to think about. Think about the hours. Yeah. Think about the facilities.
The curricular activities that they offer.
Yeah. So you also have to think about what curriculum they follow, how do they teach it, and where do they recruit their teachers from.
Mm-hmm.
I would really, really investigate, okay, well, where do you find your teachers and do you have a bias for what sort of teachers you get?
See, I know Sadie's school, they're doing big recruiting for Australian and Scottish teachers because I didn't realise this until I started working in a school. Scotland has a completely different curriculum.
Yeah,
to
they
the
do. Yeah, they do.
And the Scottish curriculum and the Australian curriculum are quite similar.
Yeah.
So I'm really loving Sadie's school at the moment because they're getting more Aussies, more Scottish teachers in.
Yeah.
And Sadie's teacher last year in Year 1 was a Scottish teacher, and hands down, I would kiss the ground she walks on. She was just amazing. And so I love that this is starting to come into Sadie's school. It makes me happy.
And you want to find out what their requirements are. I mean, I remember in grade 5, my eldest, we went to parent teacher night and there was, it's a big school that she's at, so there were 7 teachers, 7 grade 5 teachers, 7 classes, and they all stood up to introduce themselves. And not one of them only had one single degree. Like, no one said, oh, hi, I graduated from teachers college
with
my bachelor of whatever. All of them, it was, I've worked in China, I've worked in Korea, I've worked in wherever, I've done a master's in, you know, special development of blah, blah, blah. So,
so for teachers that have had an expat life that are then with teaching kids that are expats,
it's perfect
because the teachers get what the kids are going through.
Absolutely. Okay, and so ask them how long they retain their teachers for.
And
I remember that was one of the things for me. There's a lot of teachers at the school my kids are at that have been there for, you know, 8 years, 9 years, 10 years.
And that's testament to the school, isn't it? Because the school, I didn't know all of this until I started working in a school.
Yeah.
The school I worked in, which is not the school Sadie went to, teachers would leave straight after their 2-year contract.
Yeah.
And that had me where I'm thinking, oh, is that the same at Sadie's school? So I did my research because I became friendly with the head of the school. And, like, Sadie's teacher this year, she's been there for 10 years.
Yeah. So that makes a huge difference.
That's testament to that the school is good and that the teachers are being looked after.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's the thing that happens here too, is it's not just new teachers, it's new schools. And in Doha, there are new schools popping up all the time.
All the time. And which are very much needed because there's so many people living here. Yeah.
But you have to be so careful that that school is going to have the longevity and that you've got to remember that you're going to be a guinea pig throughout that whole process.
Personally, I wouldn't be putting Sadie into a school that's brand new.
No.
Personally, I wouldn't be doing.
No. A lot of people don't have the choice.
Yeah.
But if you had the choice, I would
go with a school that's established.
Okay. So also you might want to look at how does the school communicate with you? Mm-hmm. Because I know one of the things that annoys me the most about my school is they're very high tech, mm-hmm. and it drives me barmy because every child from grade 6 onwards gets a laptop.
Right.
And I don't think that they should. Mm-hmm. I know that might be a bit controversial, but I don't think a lot of kids in grade 6 are ready to have the responsibility of a laptop, as mm-hmm. in they get way too distracted.
Yeah.
And we have issues of that in our house at the moment, so maybe that's why I'm particularly passionate about it right now. You're looking at a woman who was up till 11 o'clock last night with her daughter finishing a science project. We're with G sitting there. I was basically silent, thinking he's going to kill her at any minute. But yeah, far too distracted. But our school is very big on tech, how they communicate with us. Yeah. So every Thursday afternoon, I receive 3 emails, bang, 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 one after all. One is from the elementary school. That's primary school to those who are in the southern end of the world.
Yeah.
So one from the elementary school principal, one from the upper elementary school principal, one from the middle school, one from the high school. Then on top of that, up pops the school magazine, which is all electronic and set into about 10 different sections.
Right.
And then within that, the director of the school makes a podcast each week, which is a visual one, and so there's a video of her talking about whatever. Oh yeah, it is
full on. We get emails,
right? We get texts as well. Do you get texts?
No, we get emails, and then it would be so they can just send an email just to my class, not even to the whole of you two. Right. But just
we get those as well.
And I'm the class mum, and I'm the class mum. So on top of the emails, I've got text message and emails coming from the mums in the class.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I am far more, I would like a piece of paper on the fridge. Yeah, this is the schedule for this week.
When Sadie started this whole email thing, the tech at school has only started in the last 2 years. So in nursery and reception, it just came through in her little bag. I just put it, because I still print everything out.
Yeah.
So when it comes out that next week's book day and you have to, and then like, right, okay, print it out, put it on the fridge, got to remember that she's got to dress up for this, she's got to take a plate for that.
Yeah.
I'm still printing everything out.
No, I'm hopeless at that. I don't print it out. And also because it comes on a Thursday, Thursday afternoon is nothing.
You're switched off.
You're ready for the weekend. End of the week. So I never read it. And so I am constantly the woman that goes
playing catch up.
Oh, it's poetry day today. Was I meant to go to poetry day? Oh my God, it's poetry day. And, you know, like just, and every day I've got 4 kids. So you might want to check on that. How do they communicate? Yep. How do you like to communicate?
Having communication is better than having no communication, I would think.
Yeah. I'm over communicated. Okay, so there is a great checklist for all of this to look at. It was the great checklist on what to look for an international school.
Yeah, it's a PDF document that I actually found on the internet that I will put in our show notes.
Fantastic.
And it's 2 or 3 pages that sort of goes through everything that we've discussed today, you know, the curriculum to choose, the activities, location, what have you. And so if you're moving to a new country, this is a really good checklist for you to go through.
Okay, so for Instagram this week, my suggestion, if anyone is a bigger fan of Asia and you know that I've never got over leaving, there's a hashtag called Everyday Asia.
Do you know that reminds me of in Malaysia, truly Asia. Remember that?
No.
It's an ad to get expats to buy property and retire in Malaysia.
Oh gosh.
And when we were there visiting, it was Malaysia, truly Asia. And then Matt and I were like, oh, we've got to buy a house. We've got to buy a house in Malaysia. We've got to retire in Malaysia.
Oh God, I would.
So the Everyday Asia hashtag reminds me of that.
So go and have a look at Everyday Asia. I was also saying on Twitter that I follow Time magazine.
Yes.
And I've found some really, really interesting things, because what I find now with news feeds and things coming through, Facebook is driving me batty at the moment with what you don't see, like all the stuff you've signed up for that you just don't see. Mm-hmm. So on Twitter, I've started following Time, and they had an article on how studying and working abroad can change you and how it changes your concept. Mm-hmm. And so there was sort of this study done that said that multicultural students, or people that work in multicultural environments, are sort of much better problem solvers, mm-hmm. and they display more creativity, and that this sort of international experience makes them more entrepreneurial.
Ooh.
But the counter argument is that that could just be that they're the sort of people that go overseas in the first place anyway, right?
Yeah.
But it's a really interesting article called How Studying or Working Abroad Makes You Smarter. Mm-hmm. It's by Annie Paul. And we'll have a link up for that as well.
Yeah.
You were going to talk about the podcast.
Yes. So last week we were interviewed by Andrew at yes. Doha Heat, which is a Doha-based podcast about life in Doha. Me.
Yes.
So completely different to our podcast.
Yes.
But we had a great time. We went to the Ginger Camel Studios.
And they were very funky, weren't they?
Yes, they were. Ginger we Camel. Couldn't find the door to get into, remember?
No.
The door's not a door.
We went to the wrong office.
Yes.
I'd forgotten that.
Yeah.
Went to the wrong. The door is like this brick wall, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and
the
door is hidden within.
But
yeah,
pull out the strings.
We were hopeless.
Very creative.
Yes.
Very funky.
But you know, while we were recording, my neighbour and very good friend Christy, who is, I think, our number one fan. So, hi, Christy.
Hi, Christy.
One, she said that if we ever stop singing our two FedEx Pats in nursery rhyme, she's going to stop listening.
No way.
She loves it.
Oh, okay.
And two, she actually works in that building and she heard us being interviewed and she knows it's going to be a good one because all she can hear was us laughing.
It was so Doha Heat is a Doha sort of centric podcast, isn't it? And he speaks to all people in Doha that
their life here, what they're doing here, and what they love about Doha.
And so usually I've listened to a few of the Doha Heat podcasts, and usually it starts with people talk about, you know, their background and where they're from and what they've done. They kind of go through a resume of who they are, and then they talk about why they're there and whatever. But I think we kind of mixed it up.
We hijacked it.
Yeah,
we didn't want to talk about our past.
No.
Or our husbands.
No.
We want to talk about us.
Yes.
And what we're doing now and what we're going to do in the future, not the past. So we did take over that podcast.
We did. In fact, I don't think he really got to speak at all.
But isn't that kind of the case when the two of us are together? But I think it'll be a good episode.
I think
and
so
he
too.
Said it was the best one he's ever done.
Well, it's out now, I think. So on Doha Heat.
Yeah, just go into your podcast iTunes and search for Doha Heat.
Yeah, and you'll
and then
see
my quick hashtag of the week. So a few episodes ago, we talked about hashtag hot dudes reading.
Yes.
And that got us off onto a tangent of what we thought was sexy in men.
Uh-huh.
Now, did we mention men with dogs?
I think we did. I think we mentioned a man with a rusty old car with a dog.
Yes, not with a Ferrari or a Lamborghini.
No,
it had to be a rusty old car. Yeah.
No.
So the new hashtag that's doing the rounds at the moment is dudes, hot dudes with dogs.
Now, this is interesting because I heard we talked about this and then about a week later I heard on the So You Want to Be a Writer podcast, they talked about it and they talked about whether it was sexist to
I think it's reverse sexism.
Oh, see.
Because if it was hot girls with
pussies,
if it was hot girls with cats.
Yes. But this is my thing. I think it would be sexist because if it was hot girls with cats or hot girls reading, there just would never be a hot girls reading, right?
No.
Because it just wouldn't.
The connotation is that you can't be a hot girl and read.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Well, this is what I'm saying. I think it became hot dudes reading because we thought they were hot because they were reading. Right?
So
and you and I, hot dudes
cracking a can of beer, we're not going to be into that.
Not so much.
But when it's more an intellectual thing,
well,
we're
for me,
into that.
I think what we were saying was we thought guys with rusty old cars were hot.
Yeah.
We thought guys with
my
dogs
big thing
were
with
hot.
A guitar.
We
Matt
thought
and his
guys
guitar.
With guitars, guys with kids, we thought were hot.
Yeah, salt and pepper.
Yeah, salt and pepper hair.
Yeah.
And
guys that can cook.
Yeah,
Greg.
All those things, right? So my guess would be if there was a hot girls hashtag, she wouldn't have a lot of clothes on. Because we
That's
would be
right.
looking at her hot,
hot girls
boobs,
in bikinis,
her
or,
hot
yeah.
bottom. But this wasn't anything like that. It
no.
was these guys, mostly, they're all winter shots because it's been done in North America.
Yeah.
So they're all in jackets
so
and scarves
think it's
and whatever.
Or reverse
sexism. I think we're being a little bit politically correct if we're going to say it's reverse sexism because I didn't think there was anything, like there weren't men with their shirts off and
no.
people going,
no.
whoa, look at the abs on that bloke. It was guys reading books that we thought were hot because they were reading
and
books.
And it's the same with the hot dudes with the dogs. It is just a man cuddling his dog.
And I think the rules were they weren't allowed to be Kindles. They had to be
had to be real books. They had which makes it sexy.
Yes.
Especially if they're like worn books, like maybe they've read them a couple of times.
So hot dudes with dogs doesn't appeal to me as much because I spend a lot of time picking up dog poo, as you know, and I'm going to go out there and pick up that later.
So there's a couple of beauties out there.
I know, and it's the bane of my existence. So no, I probably wouldn't be hot dudes with dogs.
I don't find it as, oh my god, I nearly knocked over Greg's very expensive book. I wouldn't be into the dogs as much as I am the books, but I still found them hot.
Okay, I think that's us again, says we will be back next week.
Yes.
What are we talking about next week?
What we miss from home.
I can't wait.
And it's not just about family and friends. It's
I call it the three F's. Yes. All right. So, we'll be back next week to talk about that.
Yes. So, and we'll see you then.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye-bye.